Welcome to the M2I Alternative Investments Chat, where we demystify the world of alternative investments and financing for entrepreneurs and investors alike. With these discussions, we hope you're more empowered to unlock new opportunities in your business or portfolio. Today, we're going to be talking about commodities. So first off, what is a commodity? Let's dive into that definition. Commodities are raw materials used to create products that consumers buy, and this can be anything from food to tangible goods like furniture. So it's all of those, it can be considered all those pieces that make up a final product, or sometimes you're just buying the product alone. Commodities are considered what's called fungible, which means that they're interchangeable. Each unit is the same regardless of who produces it. However, we should mention, you know, you might be thinking, well, there's some products that are better than others, right? Yes, a lot of these products have different grading or scales. So there's actually, believe it or not, a grading for corn. And if you have something that's a number two corn and it's graded that way and it comes from one producer, and then you have a number two corn that comes from another producer, those are considered the same thing because they're the same grade and they're the same product.
It doesn't matter which farmer grew them. It's right. They're both number two, so they fall under number two category.
Yeah, exactly. And there are different types of commodities. The first one that we're going to cover are hard commodities. Okay. Hard commodities are mined, extracted, or pumped out of the ground. So they come from the earth. And these form the basis of the industrial process, powering machines and providing raw materials. So if you think about this, this is gold, you're mining gold, rubber, oil, all these things come from the earth. We're taking them out of the earth and we're sometimes turning them into other products or we're utilizing the product on its own.
Got it.
And then there are soft commodities. Soft commodities are grown or bred for human or animal consumption like agriculture and livestock.
Got it.
Soft commodities are farmed all over the world, right? There are different products that come from all different places in the globe.
Right.
And an example of this is wheat, coffee, sugar, soybeans, and even pork, pigs. So in addition to hard and soft goods, typically traders split commodities into three categories. Do you want to cover those three categories?
Yeah. So those three categories are energy, agriculture, and metals. Those are the three big ones. So energy commodities are pumped out of the ground. So examples are the U.S. crude oil, European crude oil, and natural gas. Again, has to come from within. Agriculture is commodities from the world's food supply for, again, both humans and for animals. So that wheat, that corn, all that good stuff. And then metals, with there are two types of the metals. Mm-hmm. So there's precious and industrial. So precious are like gold, silver, platinum, all the things you want to put on your fingers, your earrings, and your necklace. And then the industrial ones are like aluminum, lead, and copper.
Yeah.
So those are the other three categories. Now, commodities have a really unique history.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about where they came from, how they got started.
Yeah.
And all of that good jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. So commodities, as you can imagine, can be traced back for thousands and thousands of years. People have been needing or using products from the earth to both eat, consume, wear, put on their bodies.
Yes.
If you're wearing some jewels for forever, right? Since basically human history, the start of human history. This market predates other economic trading like stocks and foreign exchange, right? Of course. And many civilizations can attribute their dominance and success to creating vast exchange systems for transferring and trading those commodities. So it was a really great way for people to make their money and kind of diverse their civilization from others who maybe didn't have access to the same products. Obviously, if you have access to, you know, in today's world, if you have access to oil, like, and you're able to get that oil out of the ground, you're probably going to be making a lot of money. So,
well, what's that old rule? Who has the gold makes the rules?
I don't know that one. So you're teaching me something.
Yeah, no. So that's, I mean, think about it. That's where civilizations got it. Mm-hmm. Whoever had the money, that's where it went. That's who got to make the rules. And they didn't have the stock market back then. So you can't trade something that doesn't exist.
Right.
But I think it's really cool that that's where all this got started. Like you traded what you had, you know, a goat for a wife, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. The whole trading, the commodities market. So if we're kind of turning back time and we're thinking about being in elementary school and you're learning about history, ancient Mesopotamia, ding, 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 maybe you remember that. Between 4500 BC and 4000 BC, people traded livestock and forms of commodity money like shells, which is pretty cool, and later gold and silver. So we always had a way of keeping track of money or wealth in some regard, even when we were just trading shells, which is kind of interesting.
That's funny.
And as gold and silver coins became more popular, commodity markets spread across Europe and urbanization, making it easier to transport livestock and agricultural commodities. And then we kind of get into some of these markets that popped up as time went on. Do you want to cover a couple of those?
Yeah. So there's the Chicago Board of Trade, or the CBOT. Mm-hmm. So that was established in April of 1814, the first modern functions and options of an actual exchange. So that's really cool. It was created by several prominent grain merchants looking to capitalize on Chicago's position amid a growing network of railroads and telegraph lines across the United States. So they had all this product. People wanted it. They needed to figure out a way to get it to other people and make some money themselves. Mm-hmm. So the CBOT quickly became the global center for agriculture commodity trading. And then in 1865, the exchange created standardized features, which are contracts, which we'll touch on in a little bit after we kind of get through the history, for grains like wheat, corn, and oats. And then right after that, just because Chicago got on board, New York had to get on board too. New York Board of Trade was established in 1870, and it was founded to facilitate cotton. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, dairy merchants they're like, hey, these people who have corn and cotton, they got something good going on. So they jumped on and created the Butter and Cheese Exchange in New York, which I would love to be on that exchange. I don't think my stomach likes it, but girl, cheese and butter are life, right? And that was renamed the New York Mercantile Exchange. Now in 1916, they did add coffee, again, staple of life, sugar, cocoa to that exchange. Mm-hmm. All great things. Now, as United States is putting together these exchanges, European markets, other countries want to get on board too. Yeah. So then in 1877, London did the metal exchange. So they took what they had. And it's the world's foremost exchange for forwards, futures, and opt-in contracts for precious metals. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit more later on about that too. It's the last exchange in Europe to still operate in what's called open outcry trading. So when you think of open outcry, think of every movie you've ever seen that's got that stocks, scene that they're like, ah! Yeah, and you're just like, yelling. I don't know what's going on. This is aggressive and I'm scared. That is open cry. That's when they're like yelling out, I'll take this, buy, trade, yada, yada, yada. So those don't really exist anymore because of the internet. But that one was the London Metal Exchange was the last one. Mm-hmm. So why is that even important? Well, it's the global benchmark, the London Metal Exchanges. It's the primary venue for price discovery for base metals impacting industries worldwide. Wow. So they're the ones who put the base price on all of these. Now, there are some risk management. It provides hedging tools for procedures and consumers to manage for price volatility. Because you don't want to make sure, again, we talked about this at the very beginning. If you make corn number two and I make corn number two, it should be the same price. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to make sure that this is the same for precious metals as well.
Yeah, sure.
And then we've got the last one, if you want to touch on that guy.
Yeah.
Going back to good old Chicago, where it started.
Back to Chicago, exactly. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange, or the COMEX, was established in 1933. So we can see that we're taking a fairly big leap in the history here. Mm-hmm. And this was a merger that occurred between several individual exchanges. And it is now one of the most recognizable metal exchanges along with the LME that you just talked about. And why is this important? Again, it's that price discovery. It helps set those global prices. And again, that risk management helps hedge against that price volatility, making sure that those things are stable, these are people's livelihoods who are producing these goods and making sure that they can get the prices that they need or should get from the products, and also making sure that they're able to produce these and still get that money back is really important. Because if you think about some of these commodities, it takes a long time for them to come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And then in the turn of the century, as you kind of mentioned, we moved from that open outcry operations to electronic trading. So it's a lot easier for these folks who are trading these items to be able to do that online, as most things with the internet has made our life easier.
Much easier.
And that has also offered lower commissions to traders, but allow for a more efficient system and easier regulation. So you might be making less of a commission, but you're actually able to do your business better overall, which then therefore can actually lead to higher yield.
Awesome.
So let's talk a little bit about how commodities markets even work.
Okay.
So we've got this thing called the spot market. Erica, can you tell me what that is?
Yeah. So spot markets are buying and selling commodities for immediate delivery. Mm-hmm. Think of like a farmer's market. You go, you're like, hey, I like this product you made. It's $5. Here's $5. Thank you so much.
You're walking
so
away with it.
You got it in. It's you know, think of physical in person. So like you got it, you take it home. Mm-hmm. That's spot markets. So it's an immediate transactions. Commodities are exchanged on the spot. Again, meaning that the transaction is settled immediately with delivery occurring right away or within a short period. So you might be like, hey, I really like this. She's like, oh, I just ran out of that flavor of soap. Flavor. There's coffee flavored soaps. Don't eat them, but you smell good. So it's like, hey, I want this coffee flavored soap. She's like, okay, hey, I'm out, but let me make it for you. I'll get it to you in like 3 days. You're like, mm-hmm. Perfect. Pair, off you go. So it doesn't necessarily mean right there, but it's within the next few days or so. And then prices on spot markets reflect current supply and demand. Again, spot price. You are, again, at this farmer's market. You see the coffee soap at this lady's. It's for $5, and you see it at the next one for $6. Well, that lady's not going to sell her soap for $6 if the one next to it is $5. Mm-hmm. So supply and demand.
Yeah.
She sees all this lady's soaps are gone. She might lower hers to $5 bucks too.
Sure.
And then there's physical delivery. So unlike future markets, spot markets transactions often involve a physical delivery of the commodity through some transactions. And they can be most likely cash settled.
Like yeah.
You're going to pay for it right then and there. Delivery of goods are pretty close after that.
Yeah.
And then there's these things called future markets. Mm-hmm. In the future. In the not future. Back to the future. In the future. So let's go over some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. So futures markets. This is something that I think a lot of folks, it's not like a vocabulary term that kind of exists on the tip of your tongue. So these are contracts to buy or sell a commodity at a predetermined price at a specific time in the future.
Right.
So how does this work? Initially, there is a contract initiation between two people. Mm-hmm. A trader enters a futures contract agreeing to buy, which is called the long position, or sell short position, the commodity at a specific price. There are two different players here. There are hedgers. Those are producers or consumers of commodities who use futures to manage price risk.
Okay.
And also speculators. These are traders who seek profit from price movements without intending to take physical delivery of that commodity.
Basically, they're locking in their price. You've got back to our example, that corn number two, they're like, you know, the market says it's $5 a pound. Cool. I'm going to go ahead and buy 500 pounds at $5 a pound. I'm just going to get it over, you know, in a few years.
Mm-hmm. When it's ready, you give it to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And who knows, by then it might be up to $7, $8, $9, $10 a pound. Right. So you've already locked in that price.
Or opposite. Right. Exactly. So again, there's always risk with these markets. That's one of them. You can win big, you can not so much. So we can kind of touch a little bit more on that later.
Cool.
There's also margin requirements. Traders must deposit an initial margin, and that is a percentage of the contract value with their broker, which serves as collateral. Maintenance margins are required to ensure that the account remains funded. So if you are purchasing something that will be ready in the future from somebody, you're putting down a percentage of that amount that will be fulfilled later on, and you'll pay the full amount later on.
And that makes sense to us. That's, I think, a lot of companies do it. You know, you've got to give a little bit to get some.
Yeah, a deposit.
A deposit of some sort, exactly. Just basically saying that this transaction is going to happen. They don't want to grow all this. And then later on, the person's like, actually, the price went up now, and now I don't want any.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, we do deposits all the time, right? If you get into an apartment, if you are booking some sort of vendor, you're likely putting down a deposit to save their work for a future date. So that's a way to think about it for sure. There's a daily settlement. So futures accounts are settled daily. Gains and losses are credited or debited from the trader's margin account based on market price fluctuations. So you're locking your price in, you're locking your, you know, goods in, but that might go up and down depending on how the market is performing or how that commodity, the supply and demand of that commodity.
Right, right. That makes sense.
And then there's expiration and discovery. Futures contracts have expiration dates. Traders can either close their positions before the expiration date or fulfill the contract by taking the delivery of the commodity. And most speculators, those folks that I mentioned earlier, they actually close their positions. And then there's price discovery. As we've mentioned a little bit before, the futures market helps determine the price of commodities based on supply and demand dynamics. So another way that, you know, you might know of this in your own personal life, if rent is super, super high, it might be because you have a bunch of people who are demanding, I need to get into a house or an apartment, and a bunch of people are putting down deposits. Well, the supply of those apartments are running low because a bunch of people are trying to move in. So those prices might go up. So that's kind of a way to bring it into your personal life if you're trying to envision that. And then there are definitely some benefits of investing in commodities if you're an investor. Do you want to touch on a few of those?
Yeah. So there's always the word that I think we say the most, diversification. So commodities can diversify your portfolio, reducing overall risk, as they often are, they move a little bit more independently than stocks and bonds. So that's a wonderful benefit. And then there's that inflation hedge, which again, commodities tend to perform well during inflation periods, helping to preserve that purchasing power. There's that global demand. Many commodities are driven by global economic growth, providing exposure to emerging markets. Again, you know, if so, let's go back to the apartment thing. They've run out of apartments. Now what? Well, they've got to mine and create steel and all the other things to build more. So that demand means we're going to build more apartment complexes, which are greater, and then you're going to have more tenants and all that good stuff. So,
and I actually just thought of another one too that's kind of funny, but, you know, avocados are a commodity. Avocados have become so much more popular in the U.S. than I think before, right? It seems like there's avocado in like everything on a restaurant menu. And of course, the avocado toast.
Yes.
So in order to compensate for that demand, we had to, of course, grow more avocados or import more avocados. So that's something to think about in terms of commodities.
I have a really big secret to tell you.
What is it?
I hate avocados.
You're canceled.
You
can't say that.
Avocados.
You're going to need to bleep that out.
I know. That one's going to have to come out. I don't know.
We just lost like 75% of our viewer base.
I'm like, I hate avocado. It's a textured thing. So I just, everybody, if you're going to the store and there's a big avocado price, I did not help that, okay? In fact, I'm the one avoiding avocados at all costs. They gross me out. Sorry, Mexico or California, wherever you're getting your avocados from. I don't want them.
More for me.
Yeah, there you go. I'll make you toast, avocado toast. You can just make me regular toast, okay? Yeah, yuck. Sorry, everybody. But back to some of the benefits there of the commodities. So there are that physical assets. So commodities represent tangible things. Again, you know, when you're dealing with the stock market, you're looking at this little, these few like letters and you're like, okay, cool. I don't know what that means. But a commodity is a tangible thing you can hold in your hand.
Right.
So that can be really appealing during market volatility because you're like, this is mine. I have it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can take this from me and I can sell it when it's appropriate.
Right.
In fact, that's kind of how I thought of investments all my life is tangible things. Like you go to a museum, that's an artwork, weird sculptures, things of that nature. That is like a tangible thing that's only going up in price.
Yeah.
And then there's potential for high returns. So commodities can experience significant Price fluctuations, offering opportunities for substantial gains. Mm-hmm. There's access to different markets. Mm-hmm. So again, we talked about those energy, metals, agriculture. So you can kind of pick and choose from all of those to enhance your portfolio breadth. And then there's that tax benefit. Mm-hmm. So depending on your location and investment vehicle, commodities might offer tax advantages compared to different asset classes.
Yeah.
So those are great.
Yeah.
Now, again, we talk about this with every single investment that we discuss. That pesky R word, risk.
I need my risk button.
I know. We got to get one.
Yeah, we do.
So talk about the risks with me here and going over some of those.
Yeah. So there's price volatility on both sides, right? Price volatility, that's the negative connotation of your price fluctuations. So commodity prices can be highly volatile, influenced by factors like supply and demand, weather events, and geopolitical tensions. On the positive side of this, something that I thought about while you were chatting is if you think about art from an artist, usually, sadly, after that artist passes, the artwork goes up in mm-hmm. price significantly because obviously that artist is not going to be creating their art anymore.
Yeah.
Plus, so
who really liked a Picasso when he was actually making them? They're fabulous now, but like, who was like, I saw this triangle and this nose like that's over by your ear and thought, that's awesome.
Right. Well,
once he passed away, man, that thing, you can't get, can't get enough of those.
Yeah, somehow that's just how a lot of these art things work. But conversely too, right, if you have invested in a lot of these art pieces and then there's a, weather disaster, that can, and then your assets are gone, like that can really affect it, or other things that happen. So that's something to think about. Of course, there's market risk, which is true of any investment we talk about. Prices fluctuate based on market sentiment. If people are like, all of a sudden, we hate Picasso.
Or avocados.
Yeah, whatever. that can affect your how much your piece is actually worth. And there's also leverage risk. So trading commodities often involves leverage, which can amplify both gains and losses. So it's a positive and a negative, increasing potential for significant financial risk. And there's also potentially supply chain disruptions. So these are actual things that are being made, right? So there is a supply chain that is associated with them. So events such as natural disasters, labor strikes, or political instability can disrupt those supply chains and actually impact those prices. We saw this during COVID. This was a huge thing that happened during COVID. A lot of people couldn't get the things they needed because it was a crisis. And also there's currency risk. A lot of commodities are often priced in U.S. dollars. So that's something to keep in mind. So fluctuations in currency exchange rates can affect the returns for those investors.
Yeah.
And there's also storage costs. So there's physical goods, right?
Yeah.
It's not just a number on the screen. It's a thing that actually needs to be somewhere.
Where are we going to store that 500 pounds of corn that we got for $5 a pound?
Right.
Where are we supposed to put that?
Right. And you have to pay money
for in that. Your storage closet? I don't think so. Like, you got to think about where to store it. Yeah.
Yeah. Costs money to store those things. And also, there are sometimes limited historical data that are associated with some of these commodities. So that can make it difficult to analyze trends or predict trends for this good if it's a new good or commodity. So that can sometimes make things a little complicated.
It goes right back to those avocados. I don't think in Mesopotamia times they were over here making avocado toast. So that market changed once it became something popular.
Yeah, of course. And then Erica, I'm hoping you can tell us, how are some of the ways that you can actually invest in commodities?
Yeah. So you can, there's physical commodities. So you're directly purchasing those physical goods and storing them,
An art piece,
bottle of wine. You can get those gold bars. Like I still want to find a friend.
A Birkin.
Oh, R.I.P. Miss Birkin. But yes, still love the bags, the muse for them. But yeah, you have those physical things that you can hang on to.
Right.
And then there's those futures that we talked about, those commodity futures. And those trading contracts that obligate you to buy or sell commodities at a predetermined price on a future date. Then you have traded funds or exchange-traded funds, so those ETFs. Mm-hmm. I think we touched on those kind of last time.
Yep.
So commodity ETFs, you invest in those, and they track the price of specific commodities or a basket of Kabanis. They provide liquidity and ease of training. Again, like you're like, hey, I want to do this. And then you can like, oh, the price went up. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and sell.
Yeah.
And again, electronic internet really helps with all of that.
Yeah.
Then you have mutual funds. So commodity mutual funds, you invest in a mutual fund that focuses on commodities or commodity-related companies and provides professional management. So again, you don't do the hard work, but you put your money in and they put it towards something and then you reap those rewards.
Right.
And then again, because everything kind of goes to stocks, there are those commodity stocks. So mining or agricultural stocks, investing in companies involved in commodity production, such as mining, agricultural firms, things of that nature.
Right.
So those are all ways that you can invest in those commodities.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, we're getting close to wrapping up the end of our episode here. So just as a quick review, the commodity market involves buying, selling, or trading raw products like oil, gold, or coffee. Investors can gain exposure to commodities by buying them on the market, investing in companies that produce them, or putting money into futures contracts whose values is derived from their price changes. Yeah. There is a lot to learn about commodities, and they're a great way to potentially diversify your portfolio. So they're great to look into and to speak with your financial advisor about as a potential investing opportunity.
Again, always do your research, but again, you never know. Just buy coffee, gold. Drape yourself in it.
Yeah, just buy gold. Just buy gold. It's really easy.
That's the best one. It was up. I checked the market this morning.
Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for more insights in our next episode. And don't forget to subscribe to continue the journey with M2i. See you next time.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as professional financial or investment advice. This podcast should not be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any securities. We strongly recommend that you seek advice from a qualified professional before making any financial decisions.